Good evening, everybody. All right, we'll start with the pledge. Madeline, can you lead us in the pledge?
Ready? Here we go. Dear Lord, we pledge
allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let the record show that Director Michelle Schneider is not here tonight. Leo Hordick is not here yet. He's going to be late, but he's not here right now. All the other directors are present. The agenda, can I have a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
I'll second the motion.
All those in favor of the agenda, say aye.
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 All those opposed, the agenda is approved. And we'll start with public comments. No public comments. Okay. No. Oh, okay.
No, oh, Daryl.
It's too bad.
My name's Daryl Sykes, and I know the windmill or wind generator is still on the table, but more people have come forward in wanting to explore alternative wind energy in the Wrightwood area. So I've got 43 yeses and 2 noes. You want them?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Daryl.
Thank you, Daryl.
Thank you. Any other public comments? Okay. All right. 5, agency reports. Hi, Susan.
Hello. Good evening. Susan Drake from County Supervisor Love and Goods Office. Just have 2 quick things. The county is reexamining the ordinance and updating it for the short-term vacation rentals. So if any of you have vacation rentals that may be affected, or you have neighbors with vacation rentals that concern you, you can certainly reach out to me in the next week, and I'll make sure to hear out what your wishes are. But here are some of the things that are on the table with those changes. They're looking at expanding that beyond the mountains into the desert region. They're looking to not allow an accessory dwelling to be used as a short-term rental. It's like a small apartment on a property or a yurt. There's lots of yurts, apparently, in Joshua Tree. They're trying to place some further restrictions on the occupancy limits and daytime visitors, restricting parking on property, including day-use guests. So any guests would have to park on your property, not in the street or on that neighbor's property. It requires the owner and the property manager to respond to complaints within an hour. Bans the use of outdoor fireplaces or barbecues or fire pits that burn any solid fuel, which I'm confident you'll all support. And it requires owners to have curbside trash pickup. So those are the things that are on the table to modify. But now's the time, if you do have any specific requests, please call our office so I can note those when the supervisor hears these changes.
Are there any new requirements for handicap access?
Not that I specifically know about, but there may be in the original ordinance. It's really, really difficult in mountain areas. I see, even going up your beautiful street, that a lot of the issues with the ADA are very difficult in mountain areas. So I'm not sure, but I certainly will read that tomorrow, John, and let you know.
And breakfast, I know, are restrictive, but
county consider short-term rental?
Anything under 30 days.
So this is really the Airbnb killer? Is that what this is?
Yes. There's already regulations in place and requirements in place. They're just re-examining it and changing it based on feedback they've got.
Are there fines, or how is it enforced? So it's so you get a complaint,
mm-hmm.
and then how is it? And then what's the enforcement mechanism?
Well, it depends on the nature of the complaint. If it's like the most active complaints we get are loud music, loud voices, disturbance of the peace,
mm-hmm.
and the property owner can be cited. And
who does that? The local police have to figure out if it's a Airbnb, or how does that work?
They have to be registered with the county.
Well, what if they're not? I mean, you just make a complaint, and then
if they're not registered with the county, and the county finds out it's being used as that purpose, they reach out and allow the person to comply, but
okay.
they keep a close eye on it. Very hard to advertise things like that and not be able to let people know that that's what you're doing.
Yeah, I just wonder what the practicality of it, really enforcing something like that. That's okay.
They enforce things up here, I know, because I hear about complaints, and when I reach out to code enforcement, they tell me what they've been cited for in the past.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I know they're responding.
Okay.
And lastly, I know it doesn't apply to any of you great drivers, but we're helping the CHP promote their Age Well driving course, which
we took together.
It was really, really good. Same instructor, Mike Mumford. I'll leave some flyers in the back. And I don't know if it worked for you, but they give you a certificate at the end. And I turned it in to my insurance company, and they gave me a really nice discount. So we're doing another one in Hesperia at the government center, so anybody's welcome.
No cost.
It was really a fun way to spend a couple hours, believe it or not. And I learned a ton about things I didn't know about driving on the freeway. That really helped. So I'll leave these flyers in the back for anybody that wants to join us.
Thank you, Susan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, item six.
We have another.
I'm sorry.
That's right, Chair Cannon.
Oh, come on up. Sorry.
Last one in, first one up.
I didn't get the memo that said it was starting at 6:30. I was early.
Yeah.
Good evening, I'm Sergeant Robert Vicari with the San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department. In Wrightwood, last month we only had 98 calls for service, which is down over your normal average, and a total of 12 reports were taken and one arrest. The high call volume in Wrightwood were burglar alarms at 8, area checks at 7, incidents at 5, disturbing the peace at 4, and follow-ups at 4. In West Cajon Valley, they barely had anything going on. They had a total of 15 calls for service and 2 reports taken with 1 arrest. The high call volumes there, if you can call them that, are traffic stops at 2, unwanted persons at 2. That was an 11-550 call under the influence of a controlled substance. One, and he was arrested. So that was your call volume for Wrightwood and West Cajon Valley.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
6:30? 6:30. I like it too.
Thank you.
Any other agencies? I don't see any. Okay. All right. Item 6, Caltrans, Highway 2, Sheep Creek Bridge update. We got some folks from Caltrans here.
Hello, my name is Sherry. I'm the newest PIO for Caltrans District 8.
I'm sorry, I didn't get to that.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I'm the newest PIO, Kim Cherry, for Caltrans
Kim
District
Cherry.
8. The newest, the freshest, the greenest. So, This project on the Sheep Creek Bridge is what we call, will be starting soon. They were actually going to start under the bridge, but we have found some lead-based paint, some environmental issues, suppose that we need to stop until we can come up with the correct procedure so that none of that gets into the sediments underneath. It's an environmental sensitive issue.
We got graffiti.
You never know. But it was, you know, as I just said, it actually did start, but they're starting under the bridge, and they have to do all of these. You know, we look for birds, we look for animals, for all the environmental issues. Don't know what all I need to say.
Just talk about, you know, what they're going to do to the bridge.
Okay, so as you know, currently the bridge only has a 1 to 2 foot shoulder on each side. They're extending that to 8 feet on both sides, with a 1 foot buffer, which makes it 9 feet on both sides. That makes it accessible for pedestrians and for bicycles. And the purpose of this whole project in the beginning was to bring it up to state standards. Oh, it is an SB1 project, so we will be taking before and after photos. She should just come up because I'm
No, it's okay. I'm going to do that. This is her first time.
I'm going to be facing this. And I feel like I'm doing that to you guys. But yes, it is an SB1 project, which we have a lot of. It's kept us very, very busy, which is good. Job security. But it is, we are doing a lot of upgrades, bringing a lot of different structures, not just this one, and roads and highways and shoulders and medians up to state standards. A lot of safety issues are being addressed so that it can make a better, traveling along just about any road makes it a better environment for everybody.
So this is SB1 money. Can you explain what SB1 is? Is that the new gas tax? Is that what that
is? Yes, it is.
So that's new. But wasn't this scheduled before that? Wasn't this?
Yes, and this project was expedited as part of that SB1.
So it would have been done without SB1.
It would have been done eventually, but not as quickly.
I see. Okay. All right. So just to clear that up.
And, we told our maintenance guys, John Martin, who is superintendent in this area, to be here, and also John Santos, the RE for this job, so that John could talk more in detail about this project and how the traffic handling was going to go, because they were able to work on the traffic plan to do the least impact to traffic.
I can actually explain that part.
You can talk about that?
Yes, they came up with a different procedure where they can actually go underneath and lift the bridge, so that they do not have to shut the bridge down. They can do a one-side closure while they're working on the other side so that we can traffic moving at all times.
That's good. Okay.
So
that's great.
That was submitted and approved, and it's going to go much more, bad grammar, much smoother than it was before. You can tell us.
Right.
So that's
okay. That's great.
Yeah. So John and Ron will be here probably close to 7.
Okay.
So if you have any questions about the technicalities and now about the delay that we have because of lead-based paint and what they're planning, because I know they're doing some work around there.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be here close to 7 so that you guys can ask technical questions. And if you have any maintenance concerns, we'll be happy to talk about those, like Route 2 opening and all of that. Ron will be here shortly also. So I'd like for them to talk, even though we kind of know what's going on.
We're going to be leaving these flyers on the back table with all the information. My contact information is on here. There's an email address for anybody who wants to be put on a mailing list. Go ahead and email me, and it tells you how to do that. There will also be upgraded guardrails on the side of the bridge, basically overall much safer, much wider, not going to impact the flow that goes underneath, and all, like I said, all the environmental protection, all those go into effect with every project that we do.
Mm-hmm.
Terry,
okay.
No, I think we'll just wait for John and Ron to get here and then take any
Making
questions.
It more technical for you.
Yeah, because I would like for them to talk about the length of the project and what their plan is for construction, handling, and that type of thing, and so that they can get into the details. Like I said, the impacts will be minimal now that they've come up with the alternative plan that Kim talked about, and there probably will be times where they'll have flagging and then also a full closure with detours in place, but it's going to be a lot less than what we were.
And all of this will be done off tourist time. None of this will be done during the major tourist season. We've already made sure that that's going to happen properly.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
John, we
May I come up and speak?
Well, I don't think they're...
That's okay.
Are you done, or...
If you have questions.
Okay, yeah, okay.
Yeah, Ms. Terry, thank you very much, and Terry, thank you for attending tonight. We've worked, Terry and I, over the years on the trail, Highway 138. But I'd just like to let you know that many of us in Wrightwood are very disappointed in this bridge. Over almost 3 years ago, Taisha Purdy was in charge here, Terry, prior to you, and she told us at a meeting here that that bridge was going to be constructed, and the first thing we came up with was we want a bike path and a walking path on the south side of that bridge almost 3 years ago. And there was all kinds of conflicts over the last few years. Yes, we could do it. No, we can't. It's been extended. Don't have the money. Yes, we have the money. And now, you folks have sent me the drawing, 74 pages of the drawings, and I see that there is no walking and bike path. And it's a shame that that couldn't have been done over the last 3 years. I know, Jerry, you just mentioned that, yes, now that there's 9 feet of paved shoulder both sides, that there's a walking space to go and bicycles. But even then, we still have to deal with traffic. You never know when some distracted driver is going to take you out. So it'd be nice if you could put a K-rail or something over there and let us have 5 feet of shoulder and still have you've still got your walkway or your driving.
But
one lane on each side. It's only going to be a two-lane bridge. It's not four.
But I got a question. I got a question on that, John. And I've heard that concern before. But if it's 9 feet, okay, if it's 9 feet, the minute you step away from the bridge, isn't the shoulder the same right there? Don't you take the same? I mean, there's not a walking path or K-rail protection after you leave the bridge. I don't really understand what the increased danger would be.
Well, we would hope that over the years we could extend the path to that point and on to White Mountain Road.
I see.
You know, that's all private property.
Yeah.
80 homes can be built in that area. We have the walking path all the way up and down. So, yes, I figured that would be the safety buffer zone. But there again, we're disappointed that you guys couldn't come up with a plan, to get that done. And while I'm up here, and Caltrans is here because they only come once in a great while. We've got 15 minutes allotted. I'd like to mention that...
Well, no. It's 15 minutes maximum. We don't want to...
Okay, I'm not going to take up all the time
with
the other people here. But on 138, when that was widened, it was on the plans that the Vista Point at Mormon Rocks was to have a storyboard. We spent a great deal of time on the wording of that. And it was on the drawings, and then curbing was to be put in there for parking. Now all we see is some white lines in the middle of that parking area. There is no signage that says Vista Points going either east or west to let people know they can pull off there and walk around. So I'd like to have that finished. Here we've been. That's been open for a couple of years now. Yes, Jerry.
Can you email that?
Yes, I see Cherry. Cherry's writing that down.
Yeah, and I'm not sure on the history of that. I do know that Taisha was working with you guys on that.
Yeah, yes.
And I was not heavily involved because she was doing such a great job.
Right.
And so I'll have to go back and find out what happened with
that. Yeah, she said there's no money, that they ran out of money when they got to that point.
Well, I do know that they ran out of money on the job.
Yeah.
But I'll ask and see if there's any future plans. Yeah,
that was part of the project that should have been completed. And again, we want to harp on the issue. 138 is a bottleneck at the railroad bridges. I know that's a railroad issue.
Yeah, it is.
But now you're going to build a railroad crossing in Victorville. Mm-hmm. If the railroad's going to give you approval there, they should give you approval here. Let's get that thing widened out. We've got four lanes on each side, and we don't have crossings for those railroad bridges. Plus the fact that the potholes going over those bridges are enough to swallow a small Volkswagen. So at least you could get the potholes fixed going over those bridges. We've talked many times about Route 66. We'd like to have Route 66 extended to Highway 138. We've been talking about that for years. It just dead ends there now. If we had it on 138, it would be a much better for traffic flow for people going up down 138 just to jump on this, the Route 66 and go down the hill when traffic is piled up on Sundays and Fridays. It's really a zoo. And the scales that are being reconstructed from the 2016 fire.
I hate to interrupt, Vince.
The scales that are being putting in, reconstructed on the southbound lanes, that was an issue before the fire. And the 18-wheelers back up there, and as we try and get on the southbound lanes of the 15, why, you have to needle, weave your way through the 18-wheelers that are backed up there to get off to have their trucks wait and safety. And so I know it's too late, but we bugged you guys, people, about it many times. We need to have that moved down the road another half a mile. There's other big turnout areas that could have been constructed, and we wouldn't have that backup of 18-wheelers when we're trying to get on the freeway. Thank you for listening. And I wanted to compliment you. Caltrans has done an excellent job. We have culverts here in town. When we have rains, they get plugged up with mud and debris. And I've seen them out there in their waders when it's pouring cats and dog rain, and they're trying to clean those culverts out to let the water flow properly, and we certainly appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, John.
Any other public comments on the Caltrans project? Okay.
Do you want me to respond to any of these?
Sure, if you'd like to,
yeah,
of course.
I'll check on the storyboard.
Can you come to the mic and do your name and all that? Sorry about that.
I'm sorry.
It's just the way it works. Yeah. Yeah.
Good evening. I'm Jerry Kasinga. Is this on?
Yes.
I'm the Chief of Public and Media Affairs at Caltrans District 8, and I used to be the PIO for this area, so I used to come up here quite a bit. So Taisha took the PIO position, and I kind of let her run with it. So the bottleneck at the railroad, we know that there were issues with the railroad during that widening project, and we were unable to expedite anything with them to be able to move forward. And then there was money issues. We had to pull money from the east end to the west end. And the railroad was not able to move along quick enough for us to start this job. So we shelved that part until
later. Was that something they were willing to do? And then was that something that Caltrans had to pay for?
It was in the project initially, and it got pulled because there were so many issues with the railroad and getting the permits and working with them in order to do the widening.
Was the railroad going to put up money for this, or no? Everything had to be paid by Caltrans for their bridge to get fixed? And
I think that most of it was Caltrans. I'm not going to say they didn't have any money in the project, but it was an issue with working with them and being able to...
They are difficult to work with.
...get it done in time in order to do the job, so it got shelved.
Yeah, okay.
And so I'll check and see if there's any... I know there's future plans to eventually go out there and do the widening.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know when. As far as the extension of Cajon Boulevard...
I mean, that's a major crossing for them.
It is. The county owns Cajon Boulevard, and so I do know that there's been discussions and talk about extending it to the 138, but you would have to ask them, like, where they're at with that and what their timeline is forever, you know, putting that in and...
Okay.
And stretching it out to the 138.
Okay.
So back to the path, the walking path, ends right there at Sheep Creek, and then you've got a few hundred feet, and then you've got the bridge. And there have been discussions about putting the path, some type of access pedestrian for pedestrian and cyclist or whatever. And because they were allowing back then when they designed this project, the 8-foot shoulder with the buffer, I'll be honest with you, when SB 1 started taking effect a few years ago, we started looking at active transportation. We actually have a person that is in charge of that section right now at work. She was appointed by John Belinsky before he went to LA, our former director. And she's done a lot of good things in our district as far as active transportation.
Well, what is active transportation?
For access for everybody else except for motorists. So walking, biking.
That's what they're calling active.
Got it.
Okay.
We get involved also in cities, counties, not just Caltrans roads.
Okay.
So there's a lot that feeds into it, and it's all about developing access for people, even ADA access for people who are not in a car.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So this would have been a great candidate back then when they were designing this job to allow something like that. So I talked to her about a month ago when John called or wrote to me, and she assigned a design engineer who's also up and coming and was appointed to this type of active transportation. So she looked into this and did everything she could to try to figure out if there was anything they could do there, like signage, stuff like that. It could have been as simple as a sign. There was no way we could go back and design, you know, we wouldn't just put in a K-rail. There probably would have been some kind of barrier there. And the reason it didn't get put in initially was cost and for environmental reasons. It would have taken a long process to go through environmental documents to be able to add that feature to that bridge. So by just back then having the 8-foot buffer, the shoulder, and then the buffer, it was suitable for people to be able to access, either walking or bicycling. So we talked to them about putting signage in or something and allowing peds or cyclists. And they said that it really didn't warrant that, that people were using other sections of the roadway anyway for that purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And there, we couldn't sign the whole road and tell people watch out for peds or cyclists because they do have the right to be out there either walking or biking.
Well, I don't think that's a question. The question is, do you get run over or not?
Yeah, and so what? Do we put a K-rail or a barrier all the way down?
Yeah.
We don't do that in mountain areas.
Yeah,
so.
Right.
And it would require a lot of environmental process in order to go through and do that.
The bridges that scare me are not that one. It's the two that are down further. Those are really scary.
Yeah, and realistically, you have one community below.
It has like a 1-foot buffer down there.
And that's why we're redoing this one. Eventually, that one will probably get done also.
Mm-hmm.
John's right that eventually you probably will get a lot of development up here. And things may change. They either may require the developer to install some active transportation features or even just upgrading the transportation system on the two to incorporate any new development up here. But right now, for a month, they looked at it and decided that it didn't warrant anything at this time. Now, that's not to say that, you know, once we start building it or it gets built, that something might change or, you know, we'll go back and talk to the sustainability manager again.
Yeah.
See if she has any ideas. You know, even putting a barrier in, but I don't know what the requirements would be for that. So, John, can you come up real quick and just talk about, like, for 3 minutes, 2 minutes, just about the window of construction and what your plans are for the project
Sure.
as traffic impacts and stuff? We don't have a lot of time.
Okay.
And Ron, you got some compliments about the great maintenance work your crews have been doing up here this winter, so thank you. That's Ron Larson. He's your maintenance superintendent for the area, and he's kind of new, and he's doing a wonderful job. And this is John Sonto. He's your resident engineer in construction for the Sheep Creek Bridge widening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Terry.
Thank you.
Thank you, Terry.
Okay, so I'll just give you an update on everything that's happened so far and where we are now. The project was awarded last year, I don't remember the exact date, in the late summer. Based on the way the contract was written and when the contract was approved, we had a start date. I think it was October, November, but we decided to postpone it. So that it wouldn't interfere with the ski season here.
Well, that was a good idea this year.
Yeah, I don't think we would have. I mean, we would have just been attacked if we would have.
Right.
You know,
right.
If we would have done this over the winter, so everybody was in agreement that we should postpone it. The contractors, the community. So, so we had decided to postpone it to the start date until early April. It turns out that we had a strong ski season, and we didn't know exactly when it was going to end, so we postponed it till April 22nd is the day that we were going to start counting the working days. So we should have already started, but there's some delays right now. The contractor has.
We told them about the lead based paint.
You told them about the lead based paint. Okay. So there's some uncertainty with exactly when they're going to start the heavy construction. They've already started. They're down there Well, they had to put an environmentally, they have to place an ESA fence, an environmentally sensitive area fence, which is going to keep tortoises from coming in. I don't know if there's any tortoises, but, and there's also some culturally sensitive areas. I don't know if it's an ancient alien site or, you know, they wouldn't actually even tell me.
It could be a frog or a bird.
Yeah, but there is something culturally down there that I don't, it's a little mysterious.
It's like Native American.
A dump site? Okay. So there's some uncertainty right now because of the lead-based paint issue. We're trying to work through that. But the contractor is actually tomorrow supposed to go out and put the ESA fence. And
Jack, if they do find a dinosaur bone or a burial ground, all bets are off. That project stops right then and there.
That's true.
Until they can protect that.
That's true.
And either rebury or remove, depending on what it is, it could really take a long time depending on what the issue could be. So I'd be interested to find out what culturally they're worried about.
I don't know. I actually tried to ask, and I got
hush hush. They never tell us because they don't want anybody to know.
Sure.
Because it's always confidential, especially if it involves a tribe.
Sure. Yes.
We have the same issue on the 138 on the east end.
Okay.
And we didn't tell anybody. There was a burial ground out there, and we had to have the Manuel tribe come out, James Ramos, and bless and do a reburial and everything. It took a long time.
Yes. However, one of the purposes of the fence that they're placing tomorrow is they're going to place it so that we don't disturb any of these sensitive areas. So I think we should be in the clear on that. I don't think they're
okay.
And I don't know, did you talk about the changes we made to the
Kim touched on it, but I want you to kind of go over what your plan was to mitigate that traffic handling.
Yes. Okay.
And reduce the impact.
So it turns out that when we designed the project, we designed it assuming the contractor was, because what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to cut the existing rails off on the side of the bridge, and then we're going to drill into them and put rebar, and we're going to form new sides to the bridge with new rails. And when we designed this project, we assumed that the contractor was going to have to get some heavy equipment out there to do the demolition, kind of the worst case scenario. So with that plan, we had anticipated we would have to move the traffic over to one side, you know, restripe everything, put K-rail up, then work on one side, finish that side, take that striping off, move to the other side, and then do the other side. The contractor, what he proposed was a plan where he said he didn't need heavy equipment. He could get people up there to do a jackhammer. It's only a 50-foot bridge. It's completely foreseeable that he could do this with just some manually with the jackhammer instead of putting heavy equipment. So he proposed that he didn't need to move the traffic over. There's enough room on the bridge where he could just put K rail on both sides. Those are the temporary concrete railing, and he can work on both sides simultaneously, which is going to greatly reduce the amount of time and the impacts to traffic that we're going to have with this. We're going to have very minimal impacts when we put the K-rail up, and then he'll be able to work on either side of the K-rail. And so that's a huge help. It's going to, and we think, it appears that we'll be able to finish all the heavy construction even before the next ski season starts. That's what we're looking at. There is still a unknown variable with the lead paint. We're going to try to address that as soon as possible. It depends on if we can get the right specialty contractor out there in the right amount of time. Let's keep our fingers crossed that it doesn't impact the job to a great degree. So that's about where we are now.
Tell them that there would be impact at times of flagging and maybe foreclosure, but they would be
It looks like we're going to be able to avoid a full closure.
That's good.
Because, again, when this project was designed, they assumed, they said the contractor they're actually going to have to lift this bridge up, take the base out of it, and put a new foundation in.
Now, they said the contract allows him to lift it up to 2 inches, but the contractor said he really only needs to lift it up a quarter of an inch just to get the weight off the existing foundation so he can pull it out. So if we only lift it up a quarter of an inch, we can actually do that with live traffic on it. So that will avoid us having to do a full closure.
Will you put out a sign when you're doing that?
So
we can understand what the risk is.
Well, there's go down the risk is non-existent. They're going to put
a quarter of an inch.
Yeah, one of the first heavy actions they're going to take is they're going to go down there. They're going to put temporary supports that are going to be plenty strong enough to support the whole bridge on its own, because that's what's going to happen for a period of time. That bridge is going to be supported with temporary supports
that
are, you know, more than strong enough to carry anything that's going to go on that bridge.
Okay.
So that's another piece of good news.
So there would not be a full lane closure, you think?
It appears that we will not have to.
But if you did, would you do the closure before? Would it be? Well, I guess it's no use speculating. If you say there's not going to be, there's not going to be.
Well, it's bad talking about it, because that's how we originally anticipated doing this.
But would you, if you did the full closure, would you notify? Would there be?
There would be a press release when we're ready to really start the work and we find out what's going on with the blending.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, big.
So full maybe closures. So people could go up Sheep Creek and go down.
And if we have time, we'll come back to the CSB before we even do the closure.
Sure, we'll take
you. Notification.
Full closures are a big deal. I mean, we try to give as much notification ahead of time. We provide signs for detours.
Mm-hmm.
We have to, because we get hammered on those things when people don't know about them. So,
right.
But it looks like at this point we should be able to avert that.
That's great.
And it looks like the anticipated impacts to traffic are going to be greatly mitigated with the course that we're taking right now.
Okay.
What's the projected completion date, John?
If everything goes as we anticipate with the contractor's proposed plan, we think we'll have the heavy construction done by like October, October, November. Barring any more complications, hopefully when we have now will not impact us until we go into the winter.
Let's just wait for the tourism for the summer to know that.
Yeah. Now, it gets a little complicated. But if we finish the heavy construction, let's say we finish in October, there's still a period. This isn't really going to impact you, but there is still a period. And it's called plant establishment. And what it is, as part of the contract, they have to. There's a certain amount of landscaping they have to do. They're planting native plants at the project site, and there's a period where they have to make sure that they take care of these plants so they grow and they're established before they walk away. And I think that's an additional.
Those impacts are very low, though.
You won't even notice. It's just
most of our projects actually have plant establishment that nobody knows about.
Right, exactly. So really, what we're looking at and hoping for is that we'll have all of the heavy construction done before next winter.
Okay. Well, thanks very much. I'm sorry we've got a huge agenda.
No problem.
So, is there any questions? Anybody have any other comments?
Nobody.
John?
Terry had mentioned this about a supplement for State Route Angeles Crest Highway.
That man, right back there.
Can you give us that, please?
My projected date was initially going to be next Friday the 17th, but the rock fall and the tree fall that's up there, we're looking at now the 24th, but it should. I'm not going to promise, but my goal is Memorial Day weekend will be open.
Will that include the Red Rock problem on the other end?
The big pile?
Yeah.
That's all. Good.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Technically, that material belongs to LA County, because that road is LA County. So it's been a little bit of a tussle between who's going to move it. We didn't put it there. District 8, District 7 did. They don't want to come and move it. We're asking them to. So I'm trying to work out a joint effort this summertime to get that it out between my area, District 8 and District 10.
So, for Angela's question, you're saying maybe the
24th.
May the 24th.
That's my goal. So I've been pushing that one so far.
Mike, you want to come to the...
Yeah. I just have one quick question.
Okay.
All the Caltrans guys are here, which is great. I know, I'm sorry, Mike Schroeder, business owner, right? I have a question with Caltrans. Ron, you guys did a great job keeping the storm drains open. But why the heck did you guys redo the storm drains 3 or 4 years ago? They don't collect the water anymore. They plug instantly, and the water overflows on the highway. Can anybody explain to me that? Why Ron has to do so much work on them? The other old drains work great.
From what I know, that was a drain improvement. that's exactly what I did when I was
told. Okay, good.
One of the issues is what they did was they initially had the TV-style drain grates that were there. Somebody complained that aesthetically they didn't look very good. What happens is since we put the flush grates in there, the material goes on top, plugs it up, whether it's a pine cone, anything, that's what stops the water from going. So what I've currently...
Can we get the ugly ones back?
So what I've done is I put in an order with the contractor that built the drains to come back and replace some of them, not all of them. The ones that are closer to the highway, for safety purposes, I don't want that TP there. So where there's two drains, I'm going to put it to the farthest part away. Where there's only one drain, I'll replace it with a TP. So I've ordered enough to change those. If any get damaged, I'll have some in stock so that if they do get damaged, we can come back and replace them.
Okay.
So, Ron, that makes sense, but the problem was when they took, we had drains where the water went down, dropped 4 or 5 vertical feet to the culvert, and then flooded out. So they had room to, they had a buffer in there to fill with water. You still left one at Victorville, still there, the old drain, functions perfectly every time we have a big storm. But as you know better than I, none of the other drains function at all. So anyway, that's just my point.
Yeah, those were built before I got here. I got here in July. I got here in July of last year, and I'm working to try to remedy that situation. So hopefully we don't have as bad of an issue this coming rain season as we did last year.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we're available to come anytime you guys want us to.
Okay.
Don't be a stranger.
Thanks, Terry. Really appreciate it. Really appreciate you guys coming.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
All
right. Let the record show that Director Leo Hordick is here now.
We also have the fire department here. Showed up late.
Okay. We got the fire department. Do we have the fire department here?
Yeah.
Okay. Can you give us a report? Thank you.
A late call. Sorry about that.
No problem.
Carl Higby, San Bruno County Fire Station 14. First and foremost, did anybody experience a phone outage today? So we were without 911 service from about 8:30 this morning until about 3:15 this afternoon.
Over the landlines? Or?
Landlines only.
Yeah,
so
okay.
Cell phones worked, and somebody miraculously got through. I don't know how, but we couldn't call out. We couldn't receive calls in, but we did receive calls.
Okay.
That's been rectified from what Frontier told us. Was there was a contractor doing some work on Edison lines somewhere in the world. Somehow they sliced a fiber optic cable.
It wasn't our guy.
It not only affected, this is the thing that I scratched my head over, the only areas that lost it was us, West Cajon, and an area in Arizona. Everything else in between seemed to work. To my knowledge, there were no incidents because of it. Business as usual with us. We're back down, coming to our motorcycle season and on the crest, especially when it opens.
Mm-hmm.
Couple rescues from the hikers getting injured up on the Pacific Coast Trail. Actually in LA County, but we're closer, so they'll send us quite often. And
minor injuries? Or?
Yeah, we flew a couple out in the last couple of weeks, but nothing really major. Okay. Just strains and topography issues mostly. But as everybody knows, fire season is coming. We've already had some, by our standards, small fires. We're kind of in the season where they're day-long activities. They're happening in the frontage area of San Gabriel, or of the San Bernardino Mountains.
Mm-hmm.
San Marino City's had a couple that went over 100 acres. It's green. It looks really nice. It doesn't look like we should have an issue. It's burning. So just biggest thing is make darn sure that everybody has as much defensible space as they can around their house.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly, anybody that's interested, we obviously have our firefighter day where the fire council, we have a big barbecue and everything scheduled this coming Saturday. We'll have things for the kids to do. Forest Service should be there. We will be there. We'll be cooking hot dogs. We'll be doing some live fire demonstrations that kids can actually participate in. And then CAL FIRE and, again, Forest Service should all be part of it. It really should be a fun deal. That's from 10 o'clock in the morning until 1500, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And that's about all I have. Does anybody have any questions?
Is that Mike's place?
The hardware store? Yeah, it's going to be a blast, so thank you. We should have a, we definitely load the people in, don't we? It's just awesome. So any questions from the council or anything you guys?
No, thanks. Thanks very much.
Thank you very
thanks
much.
For coming over. Thank you. No, it's okay.
Thank you.
We did change the meeting time to 6:30. Yeah, I don't think we'd let everybody know that. So.
We were chasing the smoke call that didn't exist.
Yeah.
Both my game, loaded with fog.
Ah, yeah.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, see you later. Thank you.
Jim here. Jim Kelly.
Quick. Jim Cowan, Golden State Water Company. Give an update. Right now, we don't really have any projects going on. What we do have is we're seeing an increase in our water supply for this year. Give you an idea, right now our average static level for the 8 wells we have here is 70 feet. Last year at this time it was 80 feet. So we've come up a little bit more than we did, and hopefully we still continue to get an increase. September of 2018, we were at 90 feet. So you can look at, we've almost gained 20 feet since last fall to this point, early spring. Hmm. And so we are seeing, you know, average recuperation right now. So I hope that we can gain, you know, another 5-10 feet if we can, because there's still a lot of water coming down the canyon still. So anyway, so that's a good point there, that we are seeing some kind of recharge. And
yeah, that is good.
Yeah, it's good. And so this year should be a good,
yeah,
good year for us, and you know,
it's welcome news.
That's all I got.
All right.
Did I read something in the paper about Phelan Pinion Hills water? They want to redo the tunnels on the way down there, and will that affect our water?
No, it won't affect us. They're downstream of us.
Okay,
so it won't impact us. Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Okay. All right. We're moving on to the consent calendar. We have the April 8th special board meeting minutes. Chuck, did you look
they
over
look,
these
yeah,
minutes?
They look
okay. April 30th, too?
That looks over. Okay.
Okay. And then resolution number 2019-06, establishing policy procedure for disposal of surplus district property. That's included. We have a motion for the consent calendar.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor of the consent calendar, say aye.
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 All those opposed, the consent calendar is approved and carries. Item 8, general manager's report.
I have to add to the business report, give an update that with the auditor, that we've, I think with the exception of one item that will be finished up tomorrow, we have everything submitted to the auditor. So we're just waiting for them to come up with a date to come by and visit us, and go through our files.
Uh-huh, okay.
Now, where does that go? Does that go to the state once they
yes.
finish it? Is that what happens?
Yes.
Okay. And have we paid them anything yet?
Yes, we have. I'm trying to remember the exact amount, but I don't remember. It was,
okay.
I think it was like 990 or something like that. It wasn't a whole lot compared to...
No, but we still have, I mean, the total was $14,000, so we've got a payment coming up, huh?
We have something coming up. They haven't
yeah.
billed us for it yet.
Okay. you're still scheduled for May 18th through May 27th for your trip?
No, I made an offer last time that I couldn't, I had to cancel my trip.
Oh, okay.
For a family matter.
Okay.
So on this ad hoc budget meeting, once looks like she's got some conflicts, scheduling conflicts.
There's been scheduling conflicts for from all sides, I'll just put it that way. I did make a recommendation, or at least asked if perhaps I should gather the questions and bring them forth, since I have more flexibility in my schedule, and then report back to the committee, and I haven't had a response on that yet.
Well, I mean, do we have a date that I'll take whatever date she gives me now. I'll just cancel whatever work stuff I got and do that. She's really difficult to work with, I'll say. I'm not happy about it. She's incredibly difficult to work with. I'll just say that. It's too bad. I'll just do whatever I got to do to be there for her.
Okay, I'll present that to her tomorrow.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Thank you. Thanks, Al, for doing that.
No problem. Thank you.
Okay. Let's move on from the general manager's report. Any public comments on that? Okay. Just want to make sure I always ask for public comments on everything. Okay. Number 9, park and recreation event coordinator contract discussion, possible action.
Monica Chigarelli. I did have some questions after doing the contract.
Sorry.
If you look at 1.2, it looks like, if I read it right, it has more to do with the insurance stuff in terms of that. What does that mean to you guys? And also, if I'm not required to flood insurance, would I be covered by the insurance?
I can answer 1.2. 1.2 talks about all applicable insurance, and because the insurance provision section 6.3 was deleted, then there would be no contingency there on the insurance side. There's no applicable insurance.
It doesn't matter.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
And the question of since I'm not required to have insurance, will I be covered under the park and rec insurance?
It seems to me that's a question for SDRMA, and I don't know if that has been asked, but I would assume so.
In what capacity, though? Covered under what capacity?
As an agent of the district.
Correct.
Is that a question we can ask SDRMA?
That would be my recommendation.
Yeah.
I believe we did ask that, I'm going to say back at the beginning of this, when we decided whether it's going to be an employee or a contractor, but I'd be more than willing to.
Can you be sure to get that in writing?
Absolutely.
Whatever that is, get that in writing.
I probably do, but I'll ask it again just to make sure.
Yeah, okay.
There's no harm in asking twice.
Yeah, okay.
And then I have another question about 3.1 and 3.4. And I'll give it to Maria first. But it basically, to me, I could be wrong, but it sounds like anything that I do, even if I ask for your guys' approval or I take it to Steve and he clears it, if it comes back and they say, yeah, it looks good, it still all falls on me if it's wrong. Even if I get it kind of cleared, is what I was reading, especially in 3.4. And I was just.
3.4.
I feel like if I bring it and I show, and I'm even showing like the liability stuff that I come up with or all that kind of stuff with Steve or the general manager, then in some way that has to lighten my liability.
Okay, I'll try and answer that one too. The intent of 3.1 is not to put any liability upon you. The intent 3.1 is to remove any liability against the district.
And in the last sentence says, to the extent that any reports, information, and or other data so provided was supplied to the district by persons or who are not employees of the district, any liability resulting from inaccuracies or and or omissions contained in said information shall be limited to liability on behalf of the party who prepared the information for the district. That's not necessarily you, but whoever provided that information to the district that you relied upon. This would limit the liability to that third party, not to the district.
If you move on to 3.4, though.
Which one, 3.4?
Yeah. I didn't read that that way.
Yeah, so 3.4 talks about the fact that the district has approved the work doesn't necessarily create any liability on the district. The intent here, again, is to remove the district's liability, not so much to pass anything on to you. The 6.0, in fact, it specifically references section 6.9, which is really the only indemnification liability provision that would apply. The 6.9 deals with any liability arising out of the contractor's negligence. So
by releasing the district, doesn't that?
There's no release here.
I mean, you said here that it's trying to release, like, can you let the district off?
No, there's no release language.
Okay. And that was my, those are my own questions.
If I may, if there's contractual issues like this, typically that could be a call to me.
Okay.
It doesn't necessarily have to
call you?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to come to the board if there's any contract interpretation questions. And if we can't resolve it, then that's something that at that point in time can be brought to the board.
Okay. Sounds
good.
Okay. Number 6.3, Steve, insurance intentionally admitted. That's from the last time we looked at this where we said we didn't want her to have to fund that.
Right, so we took out all of the insurance.
Right. Okay, then the other one was 6.12, ownership of software intentionally admitted. What is that?
That was another provision, a standard provision that would create an obligation on behalf of Monica to provide indemnification related to any software that was being produced as a result of her work for the district. Because that didn't apply in connection with the services that she would be providing, the board again deleted that and removed that provision from the contract.
Okay, so you could deal with Steve directly on that contract to work on that. And there's no action on item 9 then. And item 10, which also involves you, is a report.
I gave you a report. I will get better at heading these things. I apologize.
That was a handout.
It's been a while since
I've been working. Really? Okay.
It was on the bottom of the packet.
Oh, it's on the bottom. Okay, got it. Thank you.
Put it underneath me.
Got it. Okay. I got it. Okay. Thank you.
So, do you want me to just kind of go through each thing, or how you guys would like to present it?
Let's just quickly walk through it.
So, I officially started work as of May 1st. So, I have 15 billable hours since then, basically, the past activities: adult co-ed softball spring tournament just ended. We total profited $829.
Is that when you say profit, is that the revenue or is that the net?
That is after all of the expenses.
That's all, so it's a net.
Yeah.
Okay. What was the total revenue on that?
$1,225.
Okay.
We had umpire costs, and then we got an award instead of giving them a discount on their season.
Okay.
Really exciting.
And I'm sorry. Which thing was that again? That was
the past activities.
Oh, okay, got it.
So I was just letting you know about our spring tournament. And then on Sunday we had 7 teams, and they played a free game guarantee bracket tournament over the weekend.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's really
what
good.
Is the three-game guarantee? What's that mean, Monica?
It just means you pay, and you're guaranteed three games before you eliminate out.
Okay.
So, like, if you lose, by the third game, you lose it, you're out. And then it's a single-game elimination after that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
So they had a good time. It lasted 3 weekends. And then on to current activities. I put out the release for the adult co-ed softball for the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Registration will close on May 20th, and mm-hmm. we already have 10 teams registered. It's going to, again, take place on Sunday, be the same format as it was in the past.
Okay.
I'm
sorry. I was just thinking about it. I was wondering if these events are in the paper. Are they in the Mountaineer?
Most of the time they are, but I don't know if this one is yet. So.
Okay.
Can you believe already?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody let me know. The
okay.
It was not.
Are you in contact with the paper?
Yeah,
I mean, a lot of people. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I just blanked on the tournament.
And do you post it on Facebook and all that stuff?
I post on Facebook. I get the flyers around town.
Oh, okay.
And I keep bumping them up on Facebook.
Okay.
And then I also, all of our team captains of the past are on an email thread, so we continue to email them.
Okay. That's great.
Are we doing it on the CSD Facebook as well?
I don't
yes.
have access to the CSD, but Al has been. I give him the flyers and
okay.
he knows that aspect.
Yeah, great.
What about Instagram? Do we have Instagram out there?
Do we have a CSD Instagram?
I don't think
no.
we have a CSD Instagram. No.
I do my personal, but upon making
so that's the other big social media is Instagram.
I'll figure out Instagram.
So, Al, are these all on the web? Our web?
Say that again?
Are all of these activities or your
nothing
report, is
yet,
it on the web?
I'm talking to you guys tonight about it.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I just started.
Person, but,
they will be.
Put them on? Yeah.
They're going to be put on the website.
Okay.
And they're going to be, we're going to start trying to decrease our paper and make the liability forms off of there and stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's current is what's going on. The one thing with the adult code stuff, all the bases that were donated to us by Little League, that they said were on the last leg, died during the tournament.
Okay.
So we do need to order a set of bases. I found some non-removable, like the ones where the base top doesn't fall off, because we're adults and we seem to need to pound the pressure to cause it to dislodge all the time. We decided to go with a non-removable base that is a safe slide type base. So hopefully it'll last longer. And that's only going to cost $160. And then we have the typical expenses for softball, which is the pitching rubbers, the ball, the chalk.
How many teams, other than the 10 that you've already registered, do you expect?
I'm not sure. I know of at least two or three more teams that I've talked to.
Okay, because didn't we in the second portion last year have like 17 or
18 teams? And I know a couple of those have, like some of those teams have kind of disbanded.
Right.
Just because, like my team, I'm not doing it anymore. So I'm like,
well, quit getting hurt during the game. That'll do
but
it.
But some have split to two.
Yeah, and some have split to two. So
okay.
There so it might be more.
And last, in every season, we get people that register on the day of closing.
Well, it's a great start.
Yeah.
So, and then we're testing activities. I just have a list here, and then I break it down more. But
mm-hmm.
adult pro-ed soccer,
mm-hmm.
children's flag football. I want to try to do a Mountaineer Day. On Saturday, we have the fields for softball on Sunday, but a children's area activity.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then a home run derby. And then I have it here a contractor instructors forum.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the garage sale weekend, at the end of it, if I can get a goodwill donation drive up here to try to earn money, and everything, I was going to just suggest that maybe the donation from the goodwill drive goes towards the village trail.
Have you been in contact with Goodwill? Yes.
I have, and they haven't called me back yet. But this
okay.
idea for the Goodwill just came yesterday.
Right. Just so you know,
so.
CERT used to do that with Goodwill, okay. and then they canceled us.
They
didn't want to come up here again.
Well, and they dropped the program a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
It looks like they brought it back.
Good.
Because I'm constantly listening.
All right.
And so I'm hoping that they'll get back to me, but I put it in because even though I haven't talked to them, because it's going to happen before the next board meeting.
Okay.
So I'm hoping we will get that. But, and then I just threw in some future ideas that have been given to me that I was going to start researching. The dog park, although I believe that falls under Al, I was going to try to help just figure out on my own spare time some property for that.
And is that because there's a lot of interest for a dog park here in Wrightwood?
I put out a request on Facebook to see what people would like when I introduced myself, and I asked for like events and activities, and I pretty much just got dog park.
I don't. Yeah, I know. Everybody wants that. The whole mound's a dog park. But, yeah.
So we are gonna.
Yeah. Okay.
Al, and I know Al has that on his radar already. That's been on his radar for a while. A kids camp for school age kids during the break. While I don't see that necessarily being able to start because of logistics over summer, we have a lot of school breaks during the school year, so we're gonna try to start working on figuring out the logistics for that. A skate park event and...
What's this gravel grinder?
A gravel grinder is, you know how we have a bunch of roads, service roads mm-hmm. in the mountains? It's become this big mountain biking event where you pick like several miles of them and you get a bunch of people out there and they...
Grind it.
Yeah, I've heard it's amazing and it brings out a lot of people, so it would bring people to the community. I'm still reaching out to people and finding out more information on it, but it is something that I'm...
So I know I get a lot of customers from San Diego. They come up here and train on our trails up here for a mammoth track up there. So they train up here. You guys have a well-kept secret up here. There's a lot of mountain bike folks that come up here and train.
Well, Monica's trying to fix that secret.
I'm trying to fix the secret, and also I know Stephanie Carroll... had all these ideas on how to possibly link a bunch of the trails to where it would make a 25-mile kind of a loop. Mm. And she said that really the trails aren't that separated. It just needs to be done and get approved. So I am going to try to meet up with her and figure that out.
Okay.
She can give me where they are because I don't mountain bike, but she did, and so she actually knows the location, so I don't have to find it.
Well, that's a great start. It's a great start.
And then before I get to the breakdown of all those items, I also have questions and equipment. I was just wondering, for umpires, referees, and officials, a lot of the local sports team stuff have officials that are teenagers. Am I allowed to use teenagers as long as the parents sign the umpire agreement with them?
Jeez, I have no idea.
It's really hard to find a lot of the officials for everything that I want to do in just the adult population. Because kids, I mean, we're talking,
high schoolers.
I'm not talking 10-year-olds, you know. But
what do they normally sign? What do umpires normally sign?
I have them sign a contract that I pulled up from another group, but Al's seen it. It's a contract. It's basically an agreement with us that they'll represent us, how they'll get paid, that they're... up for like a 1099.
Wouldn't you just have a waiver? You have the standard California waiver as part of the parents to sign.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what you're getting into exactly because I think the minors don't have legal capacity to enter into an agreement.
So. Right, so you just got to get their parents to sign.
Yeah,
are you guys okay if I do that?
Well, I think we need some kind of waiver though that you would get at a ski resort or anything like that. I think you would need that.
Yeah, we can work on it. Right.
There's got to be
paperwork for that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, while I also believe that this one falls with Al, I was contacted by a board member asking for bike racks to be placed at the community center. Just put it out there. I researched it. It's $140 for a 10-bike bike rack. They said there's no bike racks in the entire town, and their child rides.
I just never noticed that.
And their child rides to the community. I mean, to the country club, locks their bike and walks into town. And so maybe having one bike rack is that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something that you guys can work out with Al. But I thought I would just mention it.
It's a good idea.
Since it was brought to me and I didn't have a chance to talk to Al before.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then the last one is background checks. We need to have a background check for anybody that's working with children under the age of 18 years old. And I know anything that I think we partner with or anything like that, we need to make sure that anybody that has contact with somebody under the age of 18, there needs to be a...
You mean a volunteer or...
A volunteer, an employee. It's a state law that we uncovered that you actually have to have a background check. There was
it's also a state law that says that you can't... I mean, I just went through this with these new employer laws. I don't know how it applies here, but you can't actually ask if someone's a felon. You can't actually ask until you. It's really confusing. So I don't know what to do with that.
Are you suggesting that for like say flag football and Mountaineer days?
Flag football, where it has to be anybody.
That would be coaches.
Yeah, any coaches. Sorry, thank you. Any coaches would have to do a background check. One of the groups that I was I'm talking to about partnering a park turn and.
How would that part of a like so if somebody because it that costs money to do that and it's about $85 to do a whole background check.
It's not for what was required is what I found. I could be wrong for what you're doing. I'll let you know a couple.
I haven't found anything cheaper. I mean it's like
for JDP, literally go to JDP, which is a very last page. I just printed out my email.
Okay.
Sorry for this. Okay. This call he sent me about 2 hours before.
What's JDP?
JDP is a company, the background checking company. They work with Little League and a bunch of other sports leagues.
Oh, okay. So maybe they specialize in this, huh?
He said in California, both of these are compliant. He recommends package one because of the price, obviously. But and really, I mean, you only need to know about one single felony. You don't need to know if they have 10. But so it would be $12.95 a coach or.
Do you know how AYSO avoids doing that? Because I know that their coaches don't do background checks.
They don't email you guys to do background checks. I have no idea how AYSO gets around that. Every district that I've looked up and tried to find their Parks and Rec thing, everything requires that they follow this fingerprinting law.
Is there a particular? I mean, it seems like the concern would always be the National Sex Offender Registry, right? For this kind of thing. But if a guy had a or woman or whatever had a felony for a drug conviction, would that matter here?
The Little League doesn't care.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just because of who I've co-coached with. Mm-hmm. But I'm just saying. Sorry.
Obviously, this is not a concern, is what you're saying? Okay.
I don't know. All right. It depends on what okay. It's for. It's like if it's. It depends on what it's for. You know what I mean? There is, you review it and you decide, essentially, and then it's on you. But yeah, I would.
But these are for the volunteers. These are not.
These are for the volunteers. And also, I know the law, I mean, everything that I looked into says volunteers, anybody that has contact with children, like where they're working with children. So I think sometimes things just slide under the radar.
Yeah.
But I don't know if Steve has any knowledge on this.
Yeah, I mean, that actually is my understanding, is that there is some level of background check, not as detailed as you would obtaining an employee.
Right.
And I know that the state of California has adopted a series of regulations that deal with when you can ask for a background check.
You have to hire them first.
Yeah.
You have to make them an offer first.
You have to make them an offer first.
And then you find out. Then you find out later.
Then you find out the background check, and then you still can't disqualify someone unless the offense for which a conviction exists is related to the type of work.
Which is open to interpretation.
So it is a difficult process.
It is very difficult, and I'm going through this now, and you have to walk this line, then you have to show them the report, then they have to agree that it's accurate. Mm-hmm. And then if it's not accurate, they have 5 days or 7 days to send something. It feels like a trap.
Yeah.
And it's just my comment on it. It just feels like you're just trapping the employer that,
right. But the employment context is different than one.
Yeah, right, okay.
And my understanding is that it's pretty common for the type of background check that Monica's talking about.
Yeah.
To apply for volunteers.
Well, certainly $13 is easy enough.
I know Helen Dell goes through with its basketball programs. Stuff
it's just an additional cost, that's all.
So, we can jump to flag football since we're talking about that.
I have one more question. Hold on.
Yes.
What about staff?
Staff, presumably there would have been a background check for staff.
Did we do a background check on Al? Or?
No.
I don't think so.
You can't. I don't think so, because you can't do it beforehand. This was brought up before. These laws we're talking about were already applied to civil employees.
Yeah, I don't know what was done with respect
no,
to.
No, we didn't. It was never done.
General manager before hiring, and then your general manager would be.
You couldn't do it before hiring.
And then keep in mind, Monica is not an employee of the district.
Yeah.
So it's a different. Yeah. It's a different scenario for contractors and consultants. You do not need to do that type of background check.
Right.
I have to get fingerprinted for the state of California for the registered nursing, so I'm up for it again. And I have to renew my license by July. I was just going to submit you guys a fingerprinting background check, since it just goes along with filling out a second form.
It's in the database already.
And that
right
way,
here.
I don't have any issues with working with kids.
Right. Right. Okay.
Just to cover me and cover you guys the best of way.
So for anything that you're requesting, like for this upcoming calendar month, do you see this as something that we need to approve tonight as far as getting background checks? Or?
Possibly. Let me explain that really quick. So I'm trying to get flag football approved. The idea for flag football, it'll be youth co-ed, approximately just 7 to 12. I'm still talking to Under Armour, which is a group that you can partner with. In partnering with them, it's $25 per player, and they will provide you a background check, some jerseys, reversible jerseys for the kids, and all of the flag medals. We can't provide that for that cost, no matter how hard we try. So I'm trying to partner with them. The only way that partnership won't happen is if we can't get it to agree, if I can't get an agreement with them fast enough to start a summer league, because we can't do a fall league. I've already talked to the school district. They said that their fields are at maximum capacity all fall, and they have no ability to open up anything for us at this time.
So would this be like a June-July program or July-August?
I guess we would be able to do it by June. I'm hoping for the end of June, July, beginning of August is what the sport would run to. I do need to open it up and allow for some time for registrations and stuff like that.
So you would charge the player $85 per participant, and then the $25 would go towards supplying all the gear.
The $25 would be going towards what I listed, and then we would still, to my knowledge, and I'm still waiting to get it back, I believe we have to still provide the football, chalking of the field, the referees, or spraying of the field, I'm sorry, and the referees. But there's no need for gold or anything like that for flag football. And it's on a smaller field, so we would be able to pull it off on the upper field.
So if you had to use, part of our staff, would they have to have the fingerprints and the background check and all that type of stuff?
If they're just painting, well, I was planning on painting the field, but if they're planning on painting the field or something like that, they're not having direct contact with the kids.
Okay.
If they're out there going, hey, kids, this is great, and they're giving them high fives and stuff, chances are, or if they're on the field, I think it's if you're on the field, you would have to. If they just had to coach or something like that.
Okay.
My question with the staff, though, is when they're in here, like with snowline players and with, you know, all those other activities, it's just something that I came across in all of my research on looking at different things, such as the California law. But,
I know. Monday is when they have the homeschooling.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's just the contact aspect. I don't know what the law is, but I guess I'll talk to Steve and we'll come up with. We'll try to figure that out, if that's okay.
Okay.
That way you guys don't have to stare at a paper all night. But basically, flag football, I'm going to try to get it over the summer. Cost per player, as of right now, if we can team up with Under Armour, NFL flag, the other one, does not offer a background check. So we have to go with NFL flag.
Can I ask a question about Under Armour? Who are you dealing with over there? Do you know?
Off the top of my head, I don't. Literally finally got an email back.
Can you email me that?
Yeah.
I do.
Oh, sweet. Okay, so NFL flag does not offer background checks. So if I have to go through NFL flag, they just provide the belts and the shirts. And then I might try to see if I can come up with it cheaper to offset the background check.
Okay.
Otherwise, I have it pretty much listed here. The financial I spaced it off at 28 players, 14 to 7 players, just because I really wasn't sure with how fast we're going to try to pull it off. And then the registration we'll collect is $2,125. Referee fees for 8 games is $450 based off of a $25 on referee fees. And then the balls, I priced it out at $160 for all the balls. Painting the field is $54, fee for the flag organization is $700, and then the medals and trophies would be $140 for 2016, and we drop it to $10. So, and obviously, the packet goes up if you have more players, and kind of just, but I think, I found out a lot of people do flag. Just, people have been coming up to me right now, so I actually was kind of shocked, because I'm sorry, Leo, I didn't really necessarily believe it. And once they start saying, I'm going to do flag football for Leo, everybody started coming up with me. So.
Thank you for doing that.
No problem. And then, I don't know if you want me to go on. So soccer is basically exactly what Natalie and I proposed before. We found cheaper goals, though. I think before we proposed that they were going to be $800, we found two goals that we could use. I think, if I wrote it right, I want to say they were $150 each. And that's including shipping. So, and that is a one-time, they are steel goals. So, based off four hypothetical teams, the income brought in from the team registration would be $1,500. The referees range from 25 to 30, so it really just depends on who we can get to referee the game, and if there's somebody up here, if we have to bring them up from the, down the hill.
Okay.
So I did the price range on it, but after goals and costs and everything, and remember the goals are just one time, but $671 to $621. And I could be off on the painting in the field. It might not cost that much because I heard that paint lasts, and then I'm hoping to kind of use the same paint lines for flag football and soccer and just touch up.
That's good. It's brilliant.
Maybe the same size field.
They are. They're like 5 yards of each other, so why not?
Close enough.
Very convenient. I mean, why are we inventing the wheel here? And then moving on to the children's activities. I did talk to Ben about this. I need to talk to him again. I sent him a text, but I haven't confirmed and talked to him more. But I did tell him that I wanted to do this. And to confirm, Ben is the Chamber of Commerce, the head of it right now.
Ben Smith?
Yeah. Okay. Sorry, I'm not sure. I did talk to him and let him know my idea for doing this, that I was going to try to get sponsorships to cover and see if I can get enough sponsorships. I'm going to try to do bounce houses and slides or bounce obstacle courses up on the upper field, some games, charge a small fee. I even have here, we'll make sure there's no money left, but as of right now, I haven't had enough time to really research to see how much money would possibly be brought in. But the idea is to give families something to do and to bring families out to want to go to the Mountaineer Days as well. So.
Okay.
And then I did the obstacle courses. I got one price for $160, but I'm not sure if it will be available that weekend. They were going to call me back.
Be aware of those bounce houses. They've had some problems with those, especially if it's windy.
Yeah, if it's windy, you kind of have to shut them down. And then you also do have to really secure them. We've used them for Halloween Carnival and for father-son camp out. I brought in a bounce obstacle course and all that. So they do pretty well. But, and then moving on, the Home Run Derby fundraiser for Parks and Rec. I would love to do it on Saturday, but if not, just any Saturday would be fine. But all age groups can participate. I plan on having different age groups, different field marks for where a home run would be based off the age group. And then it would be on the lower baseball field at the elementary school. Charge $15 a person. If you pre-register, we would give participants a T-shirt. I would say Wrightwood CSB Home Run Derby 2019. And then on the back, any sponsorships that we get for prizes would all be labeled on the back.
Maybe.
Need that for sponsorships, y'all. But they'll be labeled, and then it'll be kind of something that people can walk around in a positive light with the CSB.
Yeah.
And the prices for T-shirts that I found, I can get them for $6 or less, depending on how many I order. But any pre-registered participant would get a T-shirt. Any non-pre-registered, you know, once you hit past the pre-registration date, you're out of luck. And then only the top winners would receive a medal or a trophy or something, or a donated prize. It just depends on how many donations you get. So the for all the pre-registered participants, you could be earning anywhere from $5 to $10 a person. And then the non-pre-registered, anywhere from $10 or more. If they're not home run hitters, they all do.
Okay, we got to kind of, we got to move along here. I'm sorry. Okay, well, thanks very much.
Do I have a approval to move forward on these?
Yes. Yes, I don't know how that works. I think we just agree. We got to, everything okay with that?
Yeah, I don't know if you.
No, we don't need a motion.
Okay. Oh, and then, sorry, the last part is the contracted instructor form. If you guys could just look at that and decide if that's okay. Basically, it says that if anybody wants to run, if Alice can prove that that's okay.
What is it now?
It's a contracted instructor form, so if somebody walks up and says, hey, I want to take a yoga class or an art class here, they can team up with the CSC, fill it out, and it can get approved. Most of the districts let their manager approve the classes, but 65% goes to the instructor and 35% goes to the district for letting them use their room and run under their insurance. And they have to fill out this whole questionnaire. So if you guys want please to look at it, go through on the map.
Yeah, I'll be glad to look at it. I think there is a policy question, though, for the board as far as the breakdown.
Yeah, because we're renting the room, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, the 65-35 is really a me decision. That's what kind of 75-25.
Yeah.
I think that's up to the board to decide how to,
right,
whether that's the appropriate breakdown.
Right. Yeah, okay, we'll look this over.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Monica.
Thank you, Monica.
You're doing
it.
You did a lot of work. Right? You did a lot of work.
Yeah.
Did all that work in 15 hours? It's hard to believe.
Billable 15 hours.
Okay. I got you. So there was more hours.
Yeah, and then looking over the contract
while
Monica was presenting, I think we can delete 1.2.
Yeah, okay.
I think 1.2 is irrelevant, so I would suggest we could delete that. But I believe the rest of the provisions should stay.
Okay, well, you'll work that out with Monica.
Right.
Okay, all right, great.
And directors are not allowed to participate in the home run derby, Leo.
I was wrong.
Can't do it.
See that? Okay.
And for the record, our office would be glad to donate and contribute to those.
Can
all
we
right.
see Steve
out there?
That's great.
Well, no one wants to see me out there. But I would be honored to donate. Those are some great programs.
Thank you very much.
All right. Any public comments on this item? No? Okay. Item 11, April financials.
Now, last month we talked about the monthly hours for the staff, and I believe you said when I asked, are we going to keep it close to the budget amounts, and you said yes, and yet yours was 35 hours over, Park was 10 hours over, and Tammy was 34.
What was the budget amount?
Up on top, 80, 80, 100 on here. These are the budget amounts.
Okay.
100. This is what we did last month.
Mm-hmm.
And this was like 34 hours, 10 hours, 35 hours. Mm. So
that's pretty significant. Huh?
You know, it's getting up there is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And the only time it looks like we've actually been the budgeted hours was for Park, and that's because we had, you know, one of the gentlemen quit and we hired another, so we had an empty position.
Empty slot for a minute.
That time, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just looking to see what can we expect from an hour standpoint, because, you know, for Park and office, it's unrealistic to say it's going to be 80 hours every month based on what we've seen for, you know, previous 9 months.
2 4 the other weeks.
Well, the only thing I can explain about this last month is that when you asked me that question, it was before a second board meeting. We had an extra board meeting involved, We've been working on, as you well know, a lot of work that had to be done with the audit. We've had some other issues that we've had to deal with, even on the park level. There's been a lot of activity on the weekends that have increased his workload. That's pretty much about what I can explain for this last month. What's ahead of us in May, I'm not quite sure, but it's probably going to be probably more like the previous month.
And that's because of the Little League that's going on right now for the outside, right? Little League on Saturday and...
Well, actually, the facility's been used a lot over the weekend. You know, Snowline Players has used it every Saturday, I guess, for the whole month. They've had some performances come up. We've had other events on the weekends that we have to try to maintain and clean and everything between the events to present everybody the same opportunity of having a nice...
Aren't they supposed to clean it, though? Aren't they supposed to do that?
Well,
I mean, are we charging them if they're... I mean, I hear laughs out there in the audience, but I'm asking a serious question. Are they supposed to clean that?
And I'm answering your question.
Okay.
The answer is yes, but they're not necessarily going to be restocking the trash cans.
Yeah.
And other issues. You know, they use the chairs, they put the chairs back, you know, restack them. If there's a mess on the floor, some do, some don't. Sometimes we just clean the floor better.
Do we take part of their cleaning deposit or security deposit and don't refund it?
Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. It just really depends on what it looks like and what it takes.
Is there any cleaning deposits that is it on here for April? Did we get any on the income side?
I don't know. Let me see. I would say not when I was doing. We just billed this week.
Yeah. Okay.
So with my experiences on rentals, once you do it once and get the message out, all of a sudden things get a lot cleaner.
Yep. That's true too.
But the Snowline Players and who's running that? Is that Cheryl Buckle? Is that she's running?
Well, the group that's been coming here has been our board member Michelle Snyder,
okay.
and Laura Steinman.
Okay,
that's the Snowline Kids though, right?
That's
kids. That portion, yeah.
Is there? Because I know if you ask them to do anything, they'll do it.
They'll do it. Yeah.
They'll mop the floor. They'll do anything.
Well,
they will. I mean, Laura will get that done. Is there? I'm serious. I mean, if we're spending a lot of time cleaning up after the Snowline Player, I think there's just no reason for that. I think they would be willing to do whatever we wanted them to do.
I would agree to a degree. I'll just put it that way. There's more to it than than what I can
Okay.
But it certainly, for my mind, you know, reinforces the fact of why are we giving them a variance if they can't even keep the agreement as far as cleaning the place. And we're spending hours of staff time.
Well, we don't know that. I mean, I don't know how much time we're spending. That's just one of the factors, right? So we've had another meeting. We've had another meeting as part of the reasons that we're over on the hours, right? That's part of it, right? This is just all part of it.
Yeah, everything's got a little fraction of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but we don't know how this breaks down. And it is a concern because, hey, are we not being realistic on the budget?
Mm-mm.
You know, if we can't tighten it up, if you're saying, hey, you know, this is about as efficient as we can get it. If we can't tighten it up, then we're just wrong on the budget. We need to adjust the budget. It's really that simple.
Mm-hmm. Well, all I can tell you is that...
You feel it's as tight as it can be? That it's efficient? I mean, we're looking to you.
And I understand your questions. I would basically say it fluctuates from time to time, obviously, as
yeah.
you can see on this chart
yeah.
as well. But we just have had a couple of really busy months that
okay.
dealt with myself
okay.
and dealt with the office more so than with the park and rec. And I attribute that to the extra work from the
well,
from the audit and things that are not normal.
I think what we should do is we should take the average of this, and that
yeah.
should be we should adjust the budget for that average.
Yeah.
And the other thing that's coming up is going to be the dump carts, and that's going to take.
Well, we've done
should
quite a bit of that.
Yeah.
Going on pretty well.
Yeah.
Yeah. It won't. I think last year we were fairly proficient. This year we're even going to be more proficient.
Yeah.
I know that there's some adjustments that need to be
well, getting the envelopes without that, you know, that's already got the return on it and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Make life a little easier.
We're making life easier, correct.
Right, okay. Okay. Well, I think we should adjust this.
I agree for the budget.
Yeah.
And find out what the average is for the
yeah for all
have.
These right
yeah.
here.
And then facility is $15 an hour.
This facility?
No. The staff wise.
Office.
The office.
Office is
yeah,
$15 an hour. The park is
$13.50. Okay.
Okay. Okay. Thanks, Al.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's see. April financials, no action on it, other than we'll figure out what the average is
yeah.
and we can bring it up the next meeting and make that adjustment, right? Right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Any public comments on that? No? Okay.
I think there's one.
Oh, there is. Okay. Thank you.
Lori Golden. One of the things that concerns me, and I think you've already basically addressed it, is that these aren't really financials. This is a list of disbursements and deposits. When do you anticipate actually getting financials?
You got to get those from the CPA.
Okay.
Yeah.
You guys don't have the ability to actually do financials in your office without the CPA?
No, we gotta because she has to look at all the entries, make you know properly get it in the right format. We can enter them, we can do that, but she really has to review them, make sure the entries are right. That's the deal we have with her.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's you know we don't have those yet, but we will.
Okay, because you're running like about 3 months behind now.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's irritating.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Item 12. Non-renewal of otherwise automatic extension of general manager employment term. Steve, can you speak to this?
Sure. As indicated in the agenda materials, board has an employment agreement with your general manager. From August 1, 2017, it has a 2-year term. There is a provision under Section 1B that has an automatic renewal period of 2 years unless either party gives notice 60 days prior to the expiration of the term. So if the board wishes to not be subject to that automatic 2-year renewal, then the board would need to take action to notify your general manager that the automatic renewal will not occur. And so I've drafted up a notice that's included in the agenda materials, and if the board is so inclined, then the action would be to approve the issuance of that memorandum and deliver it to your general manager. That doesn't mean that anyone's being fired or anything. It's just a notice non-renewal of that automatic 2-year period.
Yeah, since this was in the original agreement, that it's automatically renewed for another 2 years,
right,
without the board having any input into it.
Right. Neither party could issue that notice.
Right.
But the time frame to do that would be the beginning probably the end of this month. So the board is inclined to go ahead and issue that notice of non-renewal. Now would be the time for the board to.
Yeah, well, it gives us options, right? It gives us options.
And if I can two cents worth,
mm-hmm.
I've kind of covered that partly in my general manager report to help with some clarity.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That this is kind of a standard operating procedure.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Any comments from the board on this?
Steve, if we wanted to revise the contract as opposed to going with the language that's in this existing contract, when would we, because we're going to vote on giving the 60-day notice of non-renewal. Today, I believe, we're going to vote on that. When would we be able to at least take a look at the contract in case we wanted to adjust that contract?
Anytime.
I mean, is that something we would have to agendize and do it at a meeting?
Well, what the board could do is the board could appoint an ad hoc committee to take a look at that contract, and then for the committee to then come back and make recommendations to the full board as to what that document should look like.
Okay.
But otherwise, yeah, we would agendize it for discussion. Could be done in closed session under Government Code Section 54957. The board is permitted to go in closed session to talk about public employee appointment. So that's something that could happen in closed session if the board wants.
Well, we don't have to.
You do not have to.
Right.
You can be even more transparent than what's required under the law, and you can have that conversation in public.
Yeah.
But we don't have to do anything tonight. What we're doing now is just the renewal portion.
No. It's just
it's a formality.
It more or less, I agree with your general manager. I think it is a formality,
mm-hmm.
and it does set the stage for the board to either renegotiate the contract or draft up new terms or wherever the board wants to proceed from here. But it does allow for the board to move forward without having the automatic two-year renewal already occur.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Kennedy, just kind of throw something out there. Would there be kind of a timeline for the ad hoc committee when they review to make sure they get it back to the board in time so that it could be published and accepted and published the invite is nothing more to bring people in for interviews and submit their resumes, that type of thing. Would the best attempt of that be within the remainder of my contract?
Well, before.
Yeah, we have to do it soon. Yeah, we have to do it soon.
Yeah, that would probably.
I think by next meeting.
Probably you would want to. Following up with Mr. Morissette's comment, I think the board may want, the board's inclined to have an ad hoc committee created. The board could do that, and then the committee can make a recommendation back to the full board at your next regularly scheduled board meeting in June.
Yeah, okay.
And then you can go from there.
Okay, well, let's vote on this first, and then we can talk about the ad hoc. Okay, can I have a motion for to accept this notice?
Yeah, I'll do the motion.
Okay, okay.
Whatever the,
okay,
the language should
I'll talk
be,
about
yes.
Okay. Okay. All those in favor of this notice, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? All right. Motion carries. So let's talk about the, can I talk about the ad hoc here?
Sure.
Is that all right?
Yeah.
Let's talk about the ad hoc. So we need an ad hoc committee to review the guts of the, mostly the terms, right? I mean, these were, at the time that we made this contract, it was, you know, we had, this is our first general manager, we didn't, we didn't know, we were just scrambling. Mm-hmm. And so probably we overlooked some details maybe that that we could fix in the second contract. So I'll ask for somebody to be on that ad hoc here. Who wants to be on the ad hoc first?
I'll do it.
I'll do
Natalie
it.
Looks very interested.
Well, because I was involved in the ad hoc originally for hiring, I'd like to give someone else the opportunity.
No one's buying that.
Well, I heard Leo and Chuck. So,
so Leo and Chuck, you guys want to be? You guys want to do the ad hoc?
Okay, Chuck.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. All right. All right. So, do I need to do anything official? That's it. All right. That's our ad hoc. Very good. Thank you. Thanks, Leo. Thanks, Chuck, for doing that. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So, item 13. Any public comments on that? First of all. No. Okay. Item 13, public hearing. So I'd like to open the public hearing for the proposed 2019-2020 Wrightwood Community Services District annual budget. And I'll take any public comments on that.
One of the first things that concerns me about the budget is that you guys are really way behind on your financials, and I'm concerned with how you came up with the budget without being really current on your financials.
Can you use the microphone?
Okay, I'm trying. Sorry. I'm concerned with how you came up with the budget without being current on your financials.
I can answer that.
Okay.
So Chuck and I really tried to review a lot of the last year's financials and really tried to look at that carefully and see where we're wrong and where we're right. And then we made adjustments from there. So yes, we're 3 months behind right now on the current one, but we looked before that to try to get an idea. And it doesn't mean that we can't change a budget either. Like tonight, you see an evidence that we're off on these hours. We're off on this item. We need to make an adjustment on this budget.
And the actuals that we based a lot of our stuff on were from February, by the way. So because we didn't have
10 months prior,
you know, that aspect of it, and part of it is just.
Well, we're
I don't want to say guess, but I mean we. Basically,
it's an educated guess.
Yeah, based on
estimate.
The financials
yeah.
that we had. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I would say because one of the things that I came up with looking at the financials that I had available is that your revenue looks about $30,000 a little high.
In what category?
Really?
So overall, total.
Oh well, but can you break it down to what category it's?
No, because your revenue on your budget here, based upon what I could compare it to, wasn't broken down in these same categories. So I wasn't able to pinpoint exactly where. So that's why I was a little.
We can ask Cecilia.
So that's where I was a little bit off. That's why I could only come up with about $30,000. So
you're saying the revenue was $30,000 too high.
Too high.
Yeah. So.
But you don't
I
know
be off,
where. And where do you see that?
I only came up with $457,000 in my estimate, based upon looking at your previous. So, I could be off. I'll say
we went over that. I mean, I'll be happy to look at it again.
Okay.
That's for sure.
But I will get
okay.
that.
Okay.
My other big problem with this is. Spell check.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Variance, you spelled it once right, and then you spelled it bad, and then miscellaneous is spelled all over the place. Question about your staff salary.
Mm-hmm.
You had a 16% increase in your general manager salary, and then a 30% increase in your office staff salary.
Yeah. We added staff.
Office staff, you only have one, I thought.
We had two staff.
One for facility and one for parks.
Yeah, we didn't at first. Yeah. And we had one.
Okay, because your parks staff only went up 3%, and I felt sorry for him because he'll get
hurt. Well, it's not that. It's not. Some of this is based on just the number of hours. You know, we're trying to control that.
Right.
Just the number of hours we have. It's not necessarily that everybody's wage went way up. But there's overtime and there's over hours on the thing. And
that's
just a management, for sure, a management question.
I mean, I was going to interject something. The office staff, give you an example, has taken on a whole lot more duty and burden compared to what the original position was like. And so that there's a compensation there. The park staff has not. The duties pretty much remain the same.
Okay.
It's in the detail, but what new duties comes to your mind? I mean, I know we're using extra hours.
A lot more of the accounting has been absorbed into away from me and into the office, which has actually lessened up some of my time and that type of thing. You know, that may not look that way on paper right now, but
Well, we also went for the facility staff from $13 up to $15 an hour. So that would have been
true.
You know, an increase. The park went from 12, then went to 13, and now it's at 13.50, I think.
The park was originally 13 and went to 13.
13.50. Okay. So, you know, that's part of the increase.
Yeah, it definitely
along
increased.
With the hours. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. Question on page 45. There's a line item for a printer, and I believe you already bought the printer.
45.
Yeah, it's.
I think we only bought one printer. Didn't we only buy? We only bought one printer, right, Cal?
45.50.
45.50.
Oh, you know what? The other printer is the dump card printer.
But that's the dump card printer, and it's already and it's in your budget again. So I wasn't sure if that was something that was overlooked or included extra.
Well, there's two different kinds of printers. How much is it there?
It's $1,150.
Yeah, that's definitely the.
The dump card printer, okay, that we originally had, has printed out a lot of cards over the last couple of years.
Did you buy another one?
I had to buy another one because the original one is starting to tax it.
Okay, so you're on budget to buy another one for next year.
I already had bought one. I bought one just recently for this next printing of the cards.
But this is your new budget, and so you've got another one in the budget to buy.
I guess we can take that one out. We won't need another one next year.
Okay.
It should be out.
Okay, and then you on page 47, you've got an addition error.
Ebola printer. Right.
Yeah. I'm sorry, page 47?
Page 47, you've got an addition error. Your park facility expense total, you've got it at $75,185.64. It should be $59,819.64. You included a subtotal of $5,366 twice.
What was the total on the $75,000?
It should be $69,819.64.
And that's just an addition error?
Yeah, it's an addition error.
Spreadsheet error.
Which then that error carries through to your total services and supplies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
and then your contingency is 10%. I'm not sure where the 10% came from because I couldn't come up with 10% even without the error. So then with the error, your 10% then goes down to 39,900.
That's the contingency, Lori?
Yeah, the contingency at 10%, you've got it at 41,000. I'm not sure how
right.
that was calculated, but it goes down to 39,914.03. There's several errors in the math. So I think you need to rework a couple of your numbers. So I've got some
concerns
with how that is right there.
Thank you.
All right. We will. Okay. All right. Well, I don't want to accept the budget until we get these things fixed.
I would suggest that you continue with the public hearing, and then we can close the public hearing and discuss what the board wants to do with
okay.
the resolution.
Okay. Well, we're continuing with the public hearing, just asking for comments, right, Steve?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. All right. Any more comments on that? Okay. All right. So the public hearing is closed. And then I think what we got to do is we got to fix these errors, which we can do pretty quick. And get that part straightened out, and then I think we've got to put it back up again and then approve it once we fix all those things.
Okay.
And if Al, can get together with Cecilia and get us a chance to meet with her, see what she's done as far as
well, that wouldn't have anything to do with this budget.
No, I understand that, but aren't we on the financials? Aren't we two behind or three behind?
Yeah, we are, but again, I don't think it has anything to do with this budget in particular. I mean, if it's
fiscal next year,
right?
July 1st.
This is right. So, I mean, the good news is that some of the errors go our way, right? Okay, all right. So we'll get that fixed. But thanks for pointing those out. Appreciate that. Okay.
I might also point out that typically with the budget, or related to the budget, then the board adopts its appropriations limit for the next fiscal year as well. And I think the board will recall your CPA prepared that documentation as well. So I think that needs to be presented to the board in June following your proposed adoption of the budget.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that needs to be calendared, as well.
Okay.
Do you have to post for another hearing for the budget or anything like that?
No, I don't believe you need to do that. This you will have another, it'll be done openly, but you do not need to post up another public hearing.
Okay. All right, thanks. Okay, item 14, so annual budget discussion, possible action. There's no action there. Okay, so item 15, public hearing, Wrightwood Community Services District, solid waste management disposal facility fees. I open the hearing for this. And let me look at the material for that.
It's in the press, newspaper, the 23rd and the 30th of April. It's been on display at the community building. And copies of the budget. Waste management disposal fee.
Copy of the budget. Budget has been available. that really apply here? Copies of the budget, but we're talking about the...
No, this is the Community Service District Waste Management Disposal Fee.
Yeah, I think this is...
Published.
This is not the...
The last paragraph.
The last paragraph's no good, right?
Yeah.
Disposal fee, okay.
Is, Steve, is this different from what we did last year?
No.
It's the same thing, right?
It, it, the, recital, the recitals have been changed to reflect the prior year's action. But as far as the amount that would be adopted, it's the exact same that has
right.
been adopted over the last
right.
couple of years.
Right.
And the map and all that's the
all
same.
All of the exhibits are the same. All of the operative provisions are the same.
Mm-hmm.
The only changes I made to the resolution dealt with incorporating last year's action into the history of what the board has done. But as far as the salient provisions of the resolutions, they both are the same. The amounts are the same. The exhibits are exactly the same.
Okay.
And I would, any changes beyond that would require considerable modifications to the process under Prop 218. So,
right.
So all right. we're doing is continuing on, readopting an annual assessment,
mm-hmm.
the exact same amount that has been done in the past.
Mm-hmm. Is there any public comments for the hearing on this? Okay. All right. If there's no public comments, I'm going to close the hearing. And we'll move on to item 16.
I have to make a motion.
That's correct. Item 16 contemplates adoption.
Right. So item 16 is Wrightwood Community Services District Solid Waste Management Disposal Facility Fees, Resolution 2019-04 and Resolution 2019-05, Discussion of Possible Action. This is just keeping the fees the same, keeping everything the same for the disposal fees.
Correct. Resolution 2019-04 would readopt those fees in San Bernardino County.
Mm-hmm.
05 would readopt those fees in Allen County.
Right. Okay. Can I have a motion to accept the two resolutions?
Can I ask you on this, Al?
Sure.
Is that a, we're talking resolution 2019-04,
mm-hmm.
and here I got 2019-01 and 2019-02.
That's the
ordinances?
That's on the next item.
Okay.
So this is 2019-04 and 05.
For resolutions.
Oh,
resolution. I'm sorry. That's right. Resolution. 2019.
I'll make a motion to adopt resolution 2019-04 and resolution 2019-05.
Second.
All those in favor of the resolutions, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the resolutions carry. Item 17, Ordinance 2019-01, Wrightwood Community Services District, Mandatory Commercial Solid Waste Service, and providing rules and regulations governing the collection, handling, and disposal of commercial solid waste. 2019-01.
Steve, is this the one that... for the collection of information that we're going to need to have from CR&R for the climate change stuff from
yeah.
the... Okay.
Both
well, from
both
Cal Recycle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Item 17 and 18 are ordinances that, staff brought to the board several months ago. There was a first reading at your last regularly scheduled meeting in April.
Right.
And so this... there were no changes that had been suggested either by the board or by the public at that first reading.
Mm-hmm.
This will be the time and place to adopt those ordinances. They would not take effect until 60 days following adoption. I believe that's provision. The one thing that would need to change, 30 days after adoption.
30.
Yeah, it's 30 days after adoption would not be effective. The one thing that does need to be changed is the approval date from April 2nd to today's date.
Right. So is everybody familiar with this? With this ordinance? So the idea is that it would be mandatory pickup for all the businesses in Wrightwood.
Yeah. I wasn't here for the original discussion.
Okay.
But I did have a question on whether this has been has there been any outreach to the businesses in the community about this? Requiring this?
No, because not specifically. When you mean outreach, like going to them and talking to them about it.
Like, do we know how many businesses in the community don't have trash pickup right now?
No. We know, no. And the idea is that CalRecycle is putting forth all these rules and regulations that say that we have to account for. This is mandatory stuff from the state of California that we have to account for all the organic pickup, the amount of recycling, the amount of regular pickup, and then we have to account and break all this stuff down. But the thing is, CR&R already has this ability.
Mm-hmm.
And so our thought was, or my thought at the time, you know, was that, if we make this mandatory, then CR&R can collect the information and give us a report we need to then hand to the state and hand to CalRecycle.
Okay. Yeah.
That was the idea.
Yeah, and I'm aware of
okay.
that, so I wasn't here for the original discussion of the whole contract.
Yeah, and I think that's an important part, is that before the district moves forward with any enforcement following potential adoption of these ordinances, that there does need to be outreach.
Yeah.
Sign up from businesses and buy in as well. And that process can take a while. I have a feeling it's still going through it. And they adopted similar ordinances about a year ago. So it does take time. What this does do is it does it reflects a step in the right direction for the district in complying with the mandates that you have under state law.
It satisfies their... Right, because if we say here's the reports we got from CR&R, we have an ordinance, it's mandatory.
Right.
Then they can't. Otherwise, they're coming after the CSD, going, hey, I sat in on the meeting, and they just flat out said, oh, I said, but there's no business licenses, for example.
Mm-hmm.
There's no business license requirement from the county. So how do we know who's got a business, who doesn't have a business, or a home-based business, and all that. Mm-hmm. And they go, we don't care.
That's pretty good.
You got to figure it out.
Okay.
Who was at the meeting with me? Were you at the meeting with me?
Chuck.
It was Chuck.
Myself and Al.
Yeah. I don't know what your guys' impression was, but it was just, hey, you need to fill out this form, and we don't really care what your excuse is. So this satisfies that.
Knowing that, I think there certainly wouldn't be, at least my recommendation wouldn't be, that there wouldn't be immediate enforcement.
Right. That's not the idea.
On businesses. The idea would be you have a mechanism, a vehicle in place, and then you would work with businesses to the extent you've got the state breathing down your neck.
And, well, there's some education here that has to happen. And I think a lot of businesses don't realize that these state regulations are in place, that they do have to break down their recycling, that they do have to say, this is how many organics I pulled out of my place, that they have to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So a quick note on that. Over the last couple of years, I've been getting notices once a year, actually the last 4 years, getting notices how much pounds of recyclable.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about,
all that stuff. So I fill that out myself.
Right.
That's just a swag of what I do, you know, monthly and then a yearly total.
Right.
And then
what we do at the grid site. We recycle the oil, we recycle cardboard. I have a special bin for that. And we recycle all the cutoffs or perishable stuff.
Right. But I think a lot of people don't, a lot of businesses, they don't know this. Right? Not everybody knows this unless they've been hit up by the county.
Right. And so to your point about the home businesses, they
right.
probably won't get
they
the
have
notice,
no idea.
But
right.
I'm sure, Mike, you probably got something in the mail. No?
Oh, yeah. See, I think
I
it's,
get it from the county.
I think it's hit and miss.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right.
I get it every year. So they're tagging the restaurants.
Do you get it?
Right, right.
I get emails from the state saying it's coming in 2020.
Oh, okay. So you know about it.
Yeah.
Plus,
yeah.
Natalie, we were looking at this, and it, from our perspective, it looked like we were going to have to hire another employee
mm-hmm.
under, you know, Al,
just
in order to just do the paperwork and get that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Knock on doors.
And we talked to Brett. I think he was at that meeting,
Brett
too.
Brett was there, yeah.
To see if we could, you know, piggyback
off
of him.
Brett is well organized.
Yeah.
He has his stuff dialed. So, using him as our record keeper is a good move
mm-hmm.
because he's got it.
Yeah.
So he can satisfy Cal Recycle. He's like, look here, I got everything right here.
Yeah.
Let me just show you.
I remember that from
yeah.
the other dump cards.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And he knows how much cardboard he picks up at the Grizzly every month.
Right. The guy's got sophisticated. They're very sophisticated, which is what we need.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, can I, is there any?
No,
any,
I was just going to thank you for answering my question.
Okay. Okay. Can I have a motion to for the ordinance 2019-01?
I'll do the motion to approve the ordinance 2019-02, establishing...
01.
01? Oh, we're up above one. Okay. For the rules and regulations governing collection, handling, and disposal of commercial solid waste.
I'll second that.
All right. All those in favor of the...
If I may, the ordinance that does require a roll call vote.
Okay. So, roll call vote. Walk me through that again. That's... Director Fordick, how do you vote?
Approve.
Director Lopiccolo, how do you vote?
Can I abstain from voting?
Yeah.
I will abstain.
I vote yes.
I vote yes.
Director Check, you vote yes. Okay. All right. The ordinance carries.
3-0, Director Lopiccolo abstain and Director Schneider absent.
Right. All right.
Two.
Okay, thank you. Any public comments on this ordinance? Sure, Daryl.
Yeah.
No, come on. You got to. I'm sorry. You got to come up to the mic and all.
You got
to
be on tape.
Sorry.
We're up here. You got to be up here.
It's a whole procedure.
Daryl Sykes, small business. The stuff I received from the state said under 4 yards per week is exempt, so that should exempt a lot of mom and pop.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
The small one, though, right? The small standard.
Right, Luke. The
yeah.
evergreen dumpster is the 3-yard dumpster.
Yeah. Okay, item 18. But isn't it, it's not just the size of the dump. Wouldn't it be how often you get it just dumped and all that too? I mean, that would have to be calculated in.
4 yards per week.
Yeah, okay. All right, item 18, ordinance 2019-02, Wrightwood Community Services District establishing a commercial recycling program.
With respect to this ordinance, this has been the companion ordinance that has been presented to the board with along with the other one. This one would establish the commercial recycling program and again take effect adopted within 30 days. The only change I would have would be from page 91, the adoption date.
Yeah, so for the commercial. For the, okay, all right. So this is along the same lines. Can I have a motion to accept this ordinance? This is just an ordinance.
We're changing the date from April 2nd to May.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We need a motion first.
All right.
Okay, I'll make a motion to accept the ordinance of 2019-02, the Redwood Community Service District establishing a commercial recycling program.
Second.
All right. Director Morty, how do you vote?
I approve.
All right.
I abstain from voting.
Okay. I approve. I say yes. Chuck, how do you vote?
Yes.
Okay. All right. One absent. The ordinance carries.
For the record, by 3-0 vote, Director Lopiccolo abstaining, Director Schneider absent.
Thank you. Okay, item 19. Any public comments on that, by the way? No? Okay. Item 19, declare surplus district property, discussion of possible action. And I think this one was about, let me get to that. The threshold, right, Steve?
So the board has adopted the consent calendar, the surplus property policy.
Yeah.
And so this is about implementing that as it relates to the furnishings that your general manager is requesting that the board declare surplus. And then the decision for the board is to, one, declare it surplus, and two, the manner in which to dispose.
Oh, I see. To declare it salvage.
Well, to surplus and then salvage is a process.
The value.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Was the Wrightwood wording in with that?
Yes.
So the Wrightwood wording.
Could you read that, please?
Sure.
If it's not too lengthy.
No. It's on page 13. If the board determines that.
Yeah.
Well, subsection C. If any inventorial equipment determined to be surplus inventory is not sold after a reasonable time using the method set forth above, or if it is determined that such property only has salvage value, and keep in mind that salvage is defined as having a reasonable resale value less than the applicable limits for inventorial equipment, which is 2,000 or more for freestanding equipment, 200 or more for furnishings, computer equipment, portable radios, et cetera. And so that's where it seems to me the $200 limit is for determining whether or not it's salvage or not. So if it's under 200, the board can declare it salvage under subsection C. Under C1, salvage items determined to be surplus may be sold to recycle centers, other agencies, private businesses, public or private organizations, or nonprofit organizations, the first priority given to entities operating within the district service area. So that would be a salvage determination. D says, if any inventorial equipment determined to be surplus inventory is not sold after a reasonable time using the methods or set forth above, or if it is determined that such property is obsolete with no reasonable resale or salvage value, the general manager may, upon prior approval of the district's board of directors, donate such property to another governmental agency or to a certified local nonprofit organization that is eligible to receive such items from the district and which provides benefits to constituents within the district service area. So if it's under 200, you could determine that as salvage and proceed with operating under subsection C1. If you don't feel it even qualifies as salvage, you can proceed through a donation under subsection D.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So what we're voting on is declaring those, the tables and chairs as salvage right now.
At this point, I would definitely go down that road. These chairs, and we had this discussion earlier, or before, that we don't know what the price, the purchase price of these chairs were to the district or to our predecessor, the county.
Well, I think Daryl commented that they were donated.
Well, that's what I was leading up to, is that they were donated. Actually, the chairs were left behind by another organization.
Mm-hmm.
The tables, I believe, were donated, but nobody really has a timeline exactly when. There's no paperwork available or anything else to verify any of that. So I have to go off of what we know.
Well, I have a question, though. We're sitting on these chairs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So why are we sitting on these chairs if we're...
He needs directions.
We haven't used them. The last few couple meetings, we used the other chairs.
Well, the last meeting, we used the other chairs. Some of my players asked me to bring these chairs back because of the volume of chairs that they wanted to have used. Plus, there was a... I'll just say there was a sentimental value applied to these chairs.
It's only that they're comfortable.
At that particular time. So we took them out of storage and we brought them here. We did not put them back in storage because Snowline Players still has another play on the 15th. And so they're using our storage areas for the chairs for their play equipment so they can have it out of the building.
Mm-hmm. Are we making the right decision here? I mean, if people are saying, hey, we don't like those other chairs, we like these chairs. Right?
Can we at least keep them for the front table anyway?
Stop with your elitist attitude.
You can keep them individually, you can donate them individually, you can keep them whatever you like.
I don't, yeah, I mean, it's...
Well, the challenge.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind.
As you can see, they're all getting beat up. It's only
worse. Ripping, they're being torn up. They create a lot of extracurricular labor for the staff. But whatever you like.
I mean, how much is it to redo these chairs? How much is it to reupholster?
$35 to $40.
Each, huh?
Each.
Where do you store the new black chairs that we got? And so we don't have to have them all stacked in.
Correct.
That was one of the advantages. That these are hard. These are hard to store. It really takes up all that wall space over there.
Like those tables over there.
Going away.
Because we're having a display case or a plaque.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. And those tables, they take maintenance. We're always doing stuff with them. Few of them have fallen down when people are trying to move them across the floor.
They are more comfortable.
Yes, they are. They're better on the back, too.
Yeah. There's two-hour chairs, and there's one-hour chairs.
That's not a good argument. I mean, I like the shorter-hour chairs.
We can have 10 of these, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, John, the staff report was basically... to ask the board to declare the chairs as salvage and allow the GM to post their availability to any nonprofit in the Wrightwood community first. Mm-hmm. And then the last paragraph, this is page 94, currently we are contacting all the known nonprofits within the district and we'll provide the results to the board as soon as possible. So they are putting it out to the Wrightwood community first.
Great.
So that's already in there.
If it's salvage, then it gets sold. If it's donate, if it's the board decides to donate it, then it's
right.
Okay, what's the board want to do here?
I'm okay with Al's recommendation. Yeah. I would like to do this.
Okay.
Donate them.
Okay. All right. Any comments, Chuck?
No, I just like to keep eight of them here. So.
You can take one with you.
Donate the other one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't know. Do we need a motion on this, really?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Oh, yeah, we do because of the value. Okay. All right. Can I have a motion for the to declare these chairs and these tables surplus?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Nope. So motion carries.
Declaring surplus and following the general manager's recommendations.
Right.
Yes. Yes. Everybody agree with that?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. Director's comments. Leo, start with you. You got any comments?
Yeah, a couple things. First of all, I want to thank the board and the president for last week. We had that special meeting last Tuesday, and I know we all volunteer our time to be a part of this board, and I just want to
thank
for everybody attending last Tuesday's meeting.
Yeah.
The second thing I have is there's a Taste of the Village on Saturday, June 1st. There's a lot of publicity and posters that are going out. So that's coming up for the Taste of the Village on Saturday, June 1st, June 1st.
Okay, very good.
So that's what I have.
All right. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you. I don't have any comments. Thank you.
Okay. I don't have any comments. Chuck?
I still want one chair, but that's
okay.
Bring your own.
All right. Future board meeting is June 4th, and it's going to be at 6:30. And I want to thank everybody for coming and sticking it out for this long meeting. Thank you. Good night.
Thank you.